Behind the Herald Headlines with Darren Mann.
Behind the Herald Headlines with Darren Mann. Today we're catching up with Professor Jonathan Yunson to get his comments and reaction to a story which has drawn a lot of attention. Lead story in the Herald earlier this week: our kids were forced to lick food from floor at school. Parents demand answers over allegations against a Herbert Hurd grade one teacher. Now, the school has taken swift action. The teacher has been given a final written warning. But, Prof, it's a very troubling story which is not sitting well with many people. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, you know, when you have such a large public school system and you have so many teachers in it, every now and again a rogue teacher will do something that is as ridiculous and degrading as the story of licking food from the floor. I mean, I really don't believe that the majority of South African teachers would regard that as even, you know, as something of any. But again, when you have a large system, you have people who are poorly trained, you have, I'm talking about teachers, you have teachers who have no core value system by which they steer their pedagogy, their ways of teaching, then you must expect, sadly, from time to time, you saw a substitute teacher at Pinelands being, you know, accused of that slave auction story, etc. So, yeah, unfortunately, you know, it would be nice to say that every single teacher is well-trained, well, has a core set of values and knows right from wrong. But unfortunately, that doesn't always happen. So this story, you know, if true, is, I mean, just imagine the impact of these kids, you know. They'll remember this for the rest of their lives as humiliation, you know.
Yeah.
And the parents are absolutely right to be upset, you know, and to demand action and so on.
The reaction from the school, appropriate?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's also laws that, you know, you're going to sort of fire a teacher on the spot as they do in some countries, you know. Yeah, there is a process. The teacher has the right to present their side of the story, and so on. So, you know, it is important for us to allow that process, the investigation to take place, and for the full facts to come out. I've learned in my life in education, you know, it's not always as clear-cut these issues as what you think it is based on headlines. So, yeah, once this process is underway, then, of course, the school, the department has to make final decisions, and it might be suspension, it might be expulsion, it might be something, you know, drastic. But for the moment, I think the right thing to do is to just not take that teacher out of the classroom until we have this investigation done and the recommendations that are implemented.
Our school system seems to be in trouble on a number of fronts, Prof. Our lead story in the Herald today: hutful teachers put down their chalk, disrespectful pupils, vandalism, the final straw at Bonsai School in Sydenham. And it says that fed up with the unruly behavior of children and regular acts of vandalism at Bonsai School, desperate teachers have downed tools in a last-ditch effort to regain control of the situation. Is our system broken?
It is, and it is broken particularly for those schools who are really struggling, you know, with resources, struggling to attract good teachers, struggling to install discipline, and so on. These are real issues, and I know it because, you know, every morning at 6:30, I started the school that was really struggling to deal with, on the one hand, issues of teacher behavior, but on the other hand, issues of learner behavior. And so, I mean, in the two stories you're covering so well, there's two sides of the coin we need to look at, you know, the kids and misbehavior that is chronic in some schools. And then, of course, the issue of teacher behavior. So, yeah, we're under pressure, you know, and unfortunately, so much of the focus of the provincial education department has been on academic achievement, that is, on getting kids to pass matric and that kind of thing. And we often forget schools have two roles. The one is the obvious role of academic attainment, but the other role is of, you know, developing citizens, developing the future workforce, developing decent human beings. And we pay less attention to the latter and a whole lot of attention to the former.
We've spoken about this before. The role of parents, that can't be ignored. They've got to take some responsibility as well.
In theory, yes. And it depends what kind of schools you're talking about, right? So if you norm this discussion around middle-class parents with, you know, two children, a cat and a dog, and a lovely car, then, of course, parents should be involved. But where I work in schools at the moment, the parents are in prison, the parents are either on drugs, the parents are either have just sort of tuned out, the kid is living with the aunt, the uncle, the grandparents, and so on. So we must be very careful, you know, when we say parents should be involved, because of course they should be involved. But what if they already, you know, absent from the lives of their kids, either physically or emotionally and so on? That's where I work right now. And I can assure you, the people who come to parents' meeting are not parents, by and large, with exceptions, of course. By and large, it's everybody else in the family, or even a guardian, unrelated, or in one case I'm dealing with now, foster parents and so on. So it's very, very difficult to expect kids in those circumstances to appear normal, to perform well, to be balanced in their behavior, when they've been traumatized and re-traumatized over and over again. So, in theory, of course, parents should be involved, but there's a qualification.
Prof, and from your expert point of view, how do we go about improving the situation? It's a societal issue, not just an educational one, but where do we begin? What can we do right now to start improving things?
Right. So, I think schools must give up on trying to solve all the social problems associated with dysfunctional, you know, learning and learners coming to the school. You can't solve the problem of the economy. You can't solve the problem of the gangs. You can't solve the problem. You know, I mean, if you want to do that, that's a very long term problem and something which you need government, etc. I say to teachers and principals in schools all over the country, when that kid comes through the gate of your school, you are the last, you know, chance saloon. You are for these kids. This might be the only place where they have adults that they hopefully can rely on to be stable, to be predictable, to be loving, to be kind, and to be tough, right? And so, yes, you're going to be a bit of a social worker and a bit of a nurse and a bit of, you know, a psychologist and a bit of, and then the thing you are really trained for, which is to be a teacher, right? But unfortunately, we don't have any way out of this. So, you have to attend. I mean, my day started off at 6 at the school this morning. Just to give you a personal example. I just left now for the university campus. And I probably dealt with about 12 kids who were just completely, you know, losing it, and some teachers as well. So the hard reality is that we have to treat every child as if they were our own children, right? And that does stress you enormously. It takes a lot of energy out of you, and so on and so forth. So teachers often burnt out because of, particularly teachers who work in schools, don't have everything, you know. And so, but who else is there if we don't step up to the plate as teachers? And I'm talking now not as a professor, but as a high school teacher supporter, you know. So you ought to love them. You got to show them direction. You got to teach them sometimes the most basic of things like good manners, like greetings, like it's unbelievable, right? And therefore, if we don't do it, there's nobody else. And I got into teaching not because, you know, I wanted to earn money. I got into teaching because I want to make a difference. And I just hope every teacher in South Africa, despite the incredible load they carry, will continue to commit to the kids, because if we don't, it's game over for them.
What sort of support can teachers expect from educational departments?
Well, you know, here again, it's a really difficult thing. In the Western Cape, for example, the department just cut all contract posts, right, under Circular 34. So guess who gets affected by this? Not the middle-class schools, the poorer schools, because they now have the money to hire extra teachers, keep the teacher-pupil ratio small, all of that stuff. So the department's priority is to make sure they can balance the budget in many of the provinces. What that means is our biggest line item, as you know, in a government department is teachers. And and so you cut on the teachers, but all you then do is to distribute the burden of caring for and teaching these children to a smaller number of educators, putting even more blame. It's a vicious cycle, you know, and it is something that I would say to all the 9 provinces and indeed to the new minister, sit down and talk about these things. Don't presume. You're in the Eastern Cape, right?
We are.
Don't presume every school is Framesby or Grey. Hi, you know, it's not. Okay. And begin to develop your policies around the needs of the schools at the bottom end of the system. And that means finding the resources to enable them to stay afloat. And so that teachers get a sense that my department understands where I teach, you know, in the northern areas, for example, of Quebec, and will back me up, etc. But at the moment, they don't feel they have that support.
We will leave it there. We appreciate your time as always. Thank you for joining us on Behind the Herald Headlines today, Professor Jonathan Janssen. Have a good day, sir.
You too.
That was today's edition of Behind the Herald Headlines with Darren Mann.